That's right, y'all. Welcome to another edition of Civic Cypher. I'm your host, Ramses Ja.
They call me Q Ward, and that just so happens to be my name.
And today's show is a very special show. Now, I say that quite a bit, but...
You know, fortunately this week, our text thread that we have between you and me and our producer, DJ Swirl...
What up, Swirl?
Plentiful stuff to talk about. And so we've kind of whittled it down... For you, our listener, today, we're going to spend a little bit of time talking about an incident in Washington State where a man was attacked by a police dog for a very long time. It's just another kind of weird way that, you know, police brutality exists and is perpetuated. Can't wait to talk about that. Also, we're going to talk about fighting back against voter suppression, so stay tuned for that.
Super
all important. Allies of... Black people and of, you know, democracy. Stay tuned for that because there's some interesting information you might want. And we're going to spend some time talking about a sheriff's department that is tracking kids they think ultimately will become criminals, which feels a little weird. Can't wait to get into that.
But how do they?
It's weird, right? And then, of course, DJ Swirl is going to let us know about once upon a time when folks used to do some really horrible things to black people and sell their body parts. But before we get there, let's start off where we like to start off, with some Ebony Excellence. So Q,
all I do is win, no matter what.
You got something for us today, right?
Yes, and I want to read this to make sure I quote this young man's position properly. Brother Carl Sandifer of Phi Beta Sigma Fraternity Incorporated, from the Elite Epsilon Phi chapter at Bowling Green State University, helps power NASA's Mars Perseverance rover mission. Bowling Green State University alumnus is the deputy chief of the Space Science Project Office at NASA Glenn Research Center in Cleveland, Ohio. I was fortunate enough to be a classmate and fraternity brother of Brother Sandifer in college. And it's interesting watching all the things that he's done, but none of us can pretend to be surprised because Carl had already started his work at NASA before we ever met him at Bowling Green State University, just to give you an idea of the level of excellence this young man has achieved all of his life. So definitely want to bring some attention to that. If you get a chance, Ramses always reminds everybody that Google is free. If you want to read a story that's going to make your day and make you feel better, just Google Carl Sandifer and type Mars or type NASA, and you will read a really, really cool story about a wonderful young man and human being and someone that I'm honored to call a friend. So go mob, Carl.
You know, there's people like me who are big fans of like Star Trek and, you know, sci-fi stuff. And it takes folks like that who are pioneering new trails or maintaining pathways for folks like me, a young me, to find themselves in those positions. So, yeah, man, shout out to him.
Whenever I hear somebody sarcastically jab, it's not rocket science, I always think about Carl. Carl's literally an aeronautics engineer and rocket scientist.
That's awesome. Well, shout out to Carl one time. You know, I really like doing the Ebony Excellence. It starts us off on a positive note.
That's a great way to start the show, bro.
Yeah. But, you know, we do have to transition here into some real stuff. You know, that's what we're here to talk about. So I'm not sure if either of you have heard of this story, but, you know, I read a story. So I read the Atlanta Black Star. You know, it's a newspaper or really more an online publication, but it's a place kind of like Civic Cypher where, you know, we catch black stories that really don't exist out in mainstream media, and we, you know, bring attention to them. And this story happened to have a video with it. And, you know, videos are, for me and UQ, they're kind of, we have a system in place. You want to tell them about our system?
So, in order to keep each other afloat so that neither one of us gets pushed too far down into a dark place and don't have, you know, don't end up with PTSD from, you know, digesting constant trauma, we alternate you know, who's going to watch the videos this week, or, you know, sometimes, you know, I've watched enough of these, bro. Can you give this a gander, because I can't take it anymore. So to try to hold each other up, we take turns, you know, watching these videos and consuming this, like I said, trauma, so that we can speak to it, you know, for our listeners and our audience.
And I think that's important. I like the system that we've developed here. But also for folks going about their day, their normal lives, you know, we recognize that a lot of this, you know, I call it trauma porn, makes its way to your phone. You know, if you have an iPhone or any other type of phone, you know, it just pops up, you know, black man assaulted, brutalized, beaten. And this has been true my whole life. You know, one notable incident happened when I was 10 years old, Rodney King beating in 92. But the one thing that we don't want to grow accustomed to is seeing black bodies brutalized, because there's the potential, I guess, for it to become normal, you know, and we always want to be in shock of that. And so while being present and making sure that we're on top of things like that, we also have to maintain a little bit of distance, because it is emotionally draining, as I'm sure you, our listener, is aware of. It's part of the reason why you're listening to the show now, I'm sure.
Yes, sir.
So in this incident, and this is why, you know, Q and Swirl are not as familiar with this story as I am. It was my turn to...
familiar with the story, but I didn't...
Watch the video.
That's what I meant. To watch the video.
So it was my turn to, you know, check this out. I had to draw the short straw. And so basically what happens in this video is it's a police chase. You know, we'll call it what it is. Police are in pursuit of a car. It seems like it's a two-lane highway, nighttime. Doesn't seem like super high speed, but certainly not speed limit, you know. It looked like whoever was getting away was trying to get to somewhere specific. That's just what it looked like to me. Because, you know, you see high speed chases where they drive all erratic. You know, this guy was on his, you know, on the road. He's like, look, I just need to get here and then I'll be good. But I don't know. So don't let me say something that I'm not sure of. It was a chase. The police were in pursuit of a vehicle. The vehicle was evading. And before I get to the rest of the story, if you're afraid of something, your body automatically responds in one of two ways. You either fight or you flee. So evading the police, when we know that the police often are very brutal in their interactions with black bodies, as we've seen time and again, decade in and decade out.
Too many times.
Yeah. It's not the worst thing in the world, but, you know, some folks really have this idea that, hey, if you just pull over, everything will be all right. And we've seen hundreds of times that that's not true at all.
They found a way to criminalize
everything,
every natural reaction,
everything, even if an unnatural reaction, your head can spin in a circle, bang, bang, bang.
Sure. If your head spins in a circle though, then I might justifiably be afraid, right?
Just be funny.
But they've criminalized every natural reaction of a person that's afraid.
That's what I was going to get to. But go ahead.
No, please. I mean, I'm just kind of piggybacking on
what
you said.
So, like,
if I'm afraid of you, I'm going to run from you.
Yeah.
Until
you can be a penguin.
Yeah.
It's built into you if you have. Anyway. So, finally, the car pulls over. Kind of drives off on the side of the road, pulls over. The guy gets out of the car. And if memory serves me correct, his hands are up and, you know, he's like surrendering. I don't know if he was on his knees, he was standing, his hands were up, something like that. But the action that followed was immediate surrender.
Of the video states that the person was very obviously
surrendering. Yeah, surrendering. You see him doing the video. I just don't remember what his mannerisms look like in that point. But no one would look at him and say, oh, this person was being aggressive or there was a threat here. And, you know, the police, this officer that was chasing them, there was two officers, but the officer that had the dash cam has a dog with him, right? So the dog gets out and goes right to work, right? Now,
hard to blame a dog because dogs do what they're trained to do.
These dogs are trained specifically to do exactly what the dog did.
Sure. So I'm not coming down on the dog, all you animal lovers, of which I'm not. I'm not the biggest dog person. I got bit by a dog when I was little.
So let me chime in. Because I'm not an animal lover sounds bad. Except when you've been bit by a dog, there is a built-in response to that.
Yeah.
He's not an animal hater.
No, never. Ugh.
You know, like if somebody said, I'm not a black people lover, it would come across a way.
Yeah.
So I just heard him say that and I had to chime in to make sure people don't think. He's not anti-animal. There's just not dogs at Ramses' house.
No, not
that. Let's just be
like
clear
that.
On that. He had a bad experience.
Shot almost deaf. So, yeah. But, you know, this is the person watching the video. The person who, you know, I was bit when I was 3 years old by a dog that I was friendly with. I hadn't hurt the dog. I would never hurt the dog. I'm the sort of person where if there's a fly in my house, if I can catch him in my hands or her, in my hands, I'll take him or her outside and release them. I don't, if some living creature is on its journey and there's no reason for me to take a life, I won't do it. I don't know, no matter how small. So I have a tremendous amount of respect for dogs. It's an extremely complex creature. Mm-hmm. And from what I understand, as long as you love your babies, you're good in my book, man. I'm not going to bring any harm to you. And I've seen dogs care for their young. That's my bar. Anyway. As someone who does not a big fan of dogs, I see the dog go to work and I'm like, oh my God, and immediately it's like, oh geez. And I'm stuck watching this video this time. Thanks, world. yeah, man, the dog proceeds to bite the man. He's surrendering. He's not running. He can't run. He's already pulled his car over. They're hanging out. Dog bites him. He goes immediately to the ground. Gets on the ground. Dog keeps biting him. Biting him. And you know how the dogs that bite and they do that and they try to drag you? So imagine those teeth sinking into your flesh and then the dog pulling and like ripping that skin away from the bone and the flesh away from the bone. So the way the police car was pointed at the scene, he was like in full view, so you could see the dog doing this, and the dog's biting his head, the dog's biting like his arms and legs, obviously. You know, there was a point where it bit his genitals.
The man has already been apprehended at this
point,
by the way.
And the whole time you hear him screaming, he says, you know, please, sir, please, screaming. I'm not, and the officer, of course, stop moving, mother effer, you know. And he's like, sir, I'm not moving. You know, obviously he's wailing. I'm not moving, you know. And the dog just continues biting.
Except for the way my body responds to being bitten over and over again by your dog that you won't call off while telling me to not move.
Yeah.
As it bites and it literally forces me to move.
Sure. I want to get to that.
Even if I'm not involuntarily moving myself, the dog's moving me.
Yeah.
Sir.
Exactly. And so this goes on for almost 4 minutes, the dog just attacking him, biting, barking, biting, biting, barking, biting. The man is just laying there, getting bitten, and the police officer is yelling. At no point does the officer go to, like, place him in handcuffs. At no point does the officer do anything to, you know, he just let the dog continue to attack him, right? And the officer was waiting for another police car to show up to then call the dog off and put him in handcuffs.
Let me guess. Because the officer was afraid.
Sure.
Oh, okay.
That'll be what he said.
Right on.
So let me say this. The man's name who was attacked is Robert Gillian, again, of Washington State. He had a broken hip as a result of that. He's suing officer, you know, I don't even want to say this guy's name. Let me cross this out.
Why not suing sue officer, the city or the police department instead of the individual?
There's a lawsuit, so he might be suing all those folks. I didn't get into the details, but the officer is on unpaid suspension, and he's suing for $1 million.
The officer on unpaid suspension?
Yeah.
That's a big
deal. Yeah, it's a big deal, right?
And here's a direct quote from him. He says, I could not move. I was unarmed. I did not threaten the officers. I have permanent scars on my head to my legs. I thought the dog was going to kill me. Okay. Now I want to talk about what happens when they say don't move, when they say stop resisting, because I think this is what often gets chronicled. And in the minds of folks who say, you know, there's a lot of folks who don't interact with the police, right? And they imagine in their minds, if I were to interact with the police, I would just do what they say. It's that simple. And you and I are both people who have interacted with the police where doing what they say is not a guarantee of anything. You know, again, if someone from Compton, California, the only time in my life when I've ever had a gun pointed at me was from the police, and I have never been arrested. I've never done anything wrong.
And not only just doing what they say, but with an excessive amount of respect and humility. And
yeah, look, how do you?
Like, I remember our interaction, which we've chronicled on the show multiple times. We were excessively, to a point of exaggeration, respectful. Yeah. and reverent and
humble,
you know what I mean? Yeah, like, yes sir, please, no sir, thank you, like every manner you can be taught.
As someone's actively denying you your dignity, insulting you, you know, ours perhaps wasn't as overt and loud, but you know, when someone
it wasn't less scary though.
Yeah, but when someone assumes anything about you,
yeah,
when their assumption is already, you know, the law is supposed to be you're innocent until proven guilty.
No, there had
but
to
be policing. It assumes that you're guilty, yes, until they figure out that they can't prove any shred of it. Because if they can even prove something that was somehow distantly related, oh, got you. See, I knew it.
And in some cases, even when they can't, they'll pretend that they can. They'll create it.
Yeah.
Like the dog smelling some hint of.
Yeah.
I won't talk about it.
That's our story. Anyway, so there's another thing that I really wanted to talk about here, and it's that we all have a nervous system, right? You know, this, forgive me, this is a bit morbid, but your nervous system is the makeup of everything in your body. So much so to where it can even cause you, I remember a pastor told me this, that when a person's life has left their body, sometimes they'll, you know, as is custom in many cultures around the world, they'll burn the body. We still do that here. It's called cremation. And if a person has been dead, even for some time, when you burn the body will shake and convulse.
Wow.
And it's a response to the nervous system. Have you seen those weird morbid videos where it'll be like frog legs and stuff, and they'll squeeze lemon on the frog legs and they'll start moving? They're like severed. You know, that's the nervous system. So obviously a frog is not moving its legs because the frog is no longer connected to its legs. Obviously a body with where the life has left it is not jumping and moving. It's a response to, it's the nervous system's response to that stimulation. And again, forgive me for being morbid, but I needed to establish that because it's like everyone forgets that even if you make a conscious decision, even if you know full well, okay, this is going to hurt. These people are going to come and they're going to hurt me. I'm going to take this and I'm not going to move because I don't want them to be afraid, because getting hurt is something I can live with. Getting killed, obviously, is something I can't live
with,
right?
Pain over death.
Right. So even if you make that decision, it's a firm commitment on your end, and you decide I'm not going to move a muscle, your muscles might say otherwise.
Especially if you're being bitten and tugged at, and your flesh is being torn into by teeth of anything. Doesn't even have to be a police trained canine.
Now, for me, there was a flashback, again, having been bitten by a dog named Josh when I was 3 years old.
Wait.
Oh, man. Listen.
Wait.
You make memories with emotion.
Listen, you guys.
So I can remember that because I was emotional.
We all just learned together that the dog, now I've heard the dog bite Ramses' story a dozen times, and I'm not exaggerating. But you and I, at today, years old, at right now o'clock, just both learned that the dog's name was what?
Josh. Belong to Melody.
Forgive me for laughing, because it's not funny that Josh bit Ramses. But man, we all just learned that this dog's name was Josh.
Well, you know what? Just to kind of bring you to where I'm at, briefly, Melody was a friend of my father's. Friend is putting it mildly. So we went to Melody's house all the time. My father and Melody would hang out. I was a child. I was three. So I would hang out in the living room, watch cartoons. Melody had a dog, Josh. I'd sit and pet Josh from time to time. I wasn't a wild kid. I wasn't petting him hard, anything like that. One day I'm sitting in front of the fireplace petting Josh. And he just, and I have a little baby arm, you know, three years old. Just turns and bit my arm. And he let go. And I saw these deep purple sockets in my arm from his teeth having sunk into my supple childlike flesh. And then, of course, I cried. My dad responded, my father did love his son. He proved it that day. Josh was not a happy camper after my father got a hold of him. Dad took me, got me wrapped up. But after that, I was not able to trust dogs, and I felt like they were all going to attack me. This is the person that I am now. I can't shake that fear. It just is there, right? Not fear, because I'm not afraid of dogs, but I can't predict them. You know, but for a long time, I was afraid.
Now, I don't think fear is a bad word in that instance.
But I know what fear looks like, and I know what I just don't really rock with you looks like, and it's definitely I don't rock with you. Once I got a man body and dogs are a lot smaller than me, it wasn't fear as much as it was. I just, you know, you keep your dog over there, I'll be going over here, we'll be fine. Anyway, with that said, watched a movie called Django Unchained. There's a part in this movie where Leonardo DiCaprio's character has one of his runaway slaves. He was a Mandingo fighter, so he had bought slaves so that they could fight to the death. One slave tried to escape. DiCaprio's character, I forget his name, didn't like that so much. It says, you know, the guys that were hunting him down, he says, why don't you let the dogs rip him apart? Let the dogs send him to heaven. And then all the guys, they're like these slack-jawed hillbilly sorts. They let their dogs go. And this man, this slave who's running away, poor guy, the dogs ripped him apart. And so that's very much what this video looked like. And, you know, my heart goes out to Robert Gillian, I believe that's how I say his last name, or Gillian, one of the two. But I think that what we take from this is that the stop resisting narrative, the, you know, be still, the comply, the don't run, those sorts of things, it's never as cut and dry as some folks would like them to be for their peace of mind. They want to assume police are not that bad, these people aren't listening, and they fail to consider the human component, or rather the nervous system component, where there are just some things that are instinctive and they happen automatically. And this story illuminates that. And then obviously on top of that, this officer lets this dog abuse this man for a full 4 minutes after he's complied. And what you have is the intersection of a human being getting attacked in real time and the responses and the convulsions that go along with that, and the officer really abusing this person through his dog and not doing anything that resembled policing at all.
For a lot of those officers, the stop resisting and the stop moving is like theater.
Yeah.
Right? It's like a reassurance to themselves to continue doing whatever it is they're doing. And it's quite disgusting.
Yeah.
And now, proper propaganda.
Watch it. Pull my mic back. You like that? Journalists with journalists too. We can strike back. Hardcore reporters with orders from headquarters. Behind enemy lines, sidestepping the borders.
If you're just tuning in to Civic Cypher, I'm your host, Ramses Ja.
They call me Q Ward, and that just so happens to be the name my mother gave me.
Yes, indeed. And we still got a lot of things that we want to talk about coming up. First, I want to talk about some voter suppression, some ways to fight back against voter suppression. But be sure to stick around because we definitely want to talk about what's going on in Florida with the Sheriff's Department tracking kids they think, quote unquote, will ultimately become criminals. And of course, our Way Black History Fact, where it's pretty morbid. Stick around if you want to find out the details on that. But let's start off with our BABA, BABA segment, how to become a better ally. So, the NAACP is an organization that, you know, we are fans of around here. NAACP is older than everybody on earth, so we don't pretend like we know more than them. But we do recognize that we perhaps represent a younger generation. But also, you know, the NAACP is sort of an all-inclusive in terms of age, at least, organization as well. It just has a lot more, relatively speaking, conservative viewpoints. But I think that everyone is on the same page when it comes to voter suppression initiatives, and the NAACP is mounting legal legal challenges to all the voter suppression laws that have passed. We know that they were trying to get them passed, but in a lot of places they have passed, and so the NAACP is putting together a defense to challenge these laws and to take them to court to, you know, prove that they're unconstitutional and so forth. And of course that costs money. And so a way that you could become a better ally to your Black brothers and sisters and your Hispanic and Latino brothers and sisters is by supporting. I'll be frank. Just check out NAACP.com and you can read all about what they plan to do to fight back. They, of course, want free, fair, and inclusive elections. And I just wanted to put that in your ear. That's the call to action this week. So, again, yeah, let's challenge these voter suppression laws. And since it's Juneteenth, there's also a lot of information in the world around you. So just kind of be clicked into your social media. It's a good time to, you know, get involved with Black folks and you know, help out where you can.
If you don't mind me saying, Rams,
go ahead.
In a time where Black people in this country, in a very real and literal way, saved democracy, it's more than discouraging to see laws put into place to not just discourage but prevent that from happening in the future, man. It's really, you guys try to keep me hopeful. Things like this just reassure the way that I feel. And I,
hey, man, you know,
it's exhausting, man.
As long as we, you know, there's a story in the Bible that's, you know, Jesus's last words on the cross, you know, Father, forgive them for they know not what they do. I'm not comparing myself to Jesus. I would never do that. But I think that the idea there is to lead with forgiveness, lead with love, and to understand that, you know, everyone has their challenges. Ours are, you know, what we talk about on the show.
I think there are people that are supporters of what I'll just call the other side that know not what they do, that really think they're doing the right thing. Mm-hmm. But I think the people that they are supporting and that they're following
absolutely know they're doing the wrong thing.
Well, that they're doing the wrong thing, but it's for their benefit.
Yep, specifically. Yeah. So yeah. Anyway, yeah, let's move it on down to Pensco County, Florida. I mean, that's
give my chuckle.
Florida is.
But to keep from punching through our table, sometimes you got to chuckle it out. You guys will know why here in a second.
So, yeah. So the Sheriff's Department in Pensacola County, Florida, has a program in place where they are tracking kids that they think will become criminals. They call it intelligence-based policing, right? So I got this from Vice, right? And the Vice has a tendency to have a liberal, you know, skew to it, to its reporting and whatever. But I wasn't looking for it to reinforce a narrative that I already have in my mind. I just came across it. I was like, really? So, you know, these people are just assuming that you're going to be a criminal when you grow up. And I watched the video, and sure enough, that's exactly what it is. And so basically how it works is, in the video at least, so the Vice folks are interviewing a father, right? And they're talking about his son. And there's a direct quote. He says, this is the father recalling an incident where he interacted with the police who were watching his son. So the father says, he's like, this is the police talking, right? We heard about your son in the other county. We want you to know we'll be keeping an eye on you, right? And when they first moved there to that Pensco County, right? What proceeds to happen is the police work with the school to get incident reports, behavior reports, things like this. And the offenders are placed under a watch by the police department.
Are we talking about children?
Children, yes. Elementary school children. Middle school and high school as well. So anybody under 18 is a child. My son Christian is 15. That is a child. So
some people at 18 are still children. But
listen, man, my child. So anyway, so what happens is... In the Vice story, just to finish up, the police end up harassing the father of the child. So the father ends up getting arrested a bunch of times. The child, of course, gets arrested. Blah, blah, blah. The story goes on. And then the father is like, you know, I'm just going to move my family because the police are... He's told a story of the police showing up to his house, knocking on the door when he wasn't home, scaring his other kids, scaring his wife, you know, arresting him because the paint on the... You have to paint your address... on the sidewalk or whatever, the paint was a little faded and you couldn't see it, and that gave them a reason to harass him. So they would harass him over and over again for years. But I think that, you know, and I want to talk about this. I think that this on its face doesn't feel like policing as much as it feels like harassment, right? Now, in your world, that goes without saying, right? But follow me. If you know... If you're a civil servant and you know that a child has had some behavioral issues, a child, right, has had some behavioral issues, they're acting up, you know, whatever, you would think, hey, we should fix this. Not, oh, let's keep an eye on him because he's going to be, or her, because she's going to be a troublemaker. You would think... Like, these are babies. They just got here. They're still figuring it out. And you don't know where they come from. You don't know what's going on. You don't know what the state of their mental health is. And, you know, policing is supposed to, like, make the community safer. And there's a way to make these people constructive, contributing members of society by offering resources that are not along the lines of gun and jail and, you know, like, let's talk, let's figure it out. What do you need? What's going on? You know, there's this weird thing that happens, and I read this story, where kids, if they have, like, parents that are real old school and they, like, beat them, right? Which I'm not talking about here on this show, but, you know, there's kids that have a problem where if they get beat, they're more likely to wet the bed, right? And those same kids, when they wet the bed, get beat. And you see how, like, quickly they get in a cycle. And it only happens with children. Right? Isn't that weird? And so this kind of feels like something very similar, where it's like, oh, you're creating the cycle that you want this child to go in. You would think that the police could put together something, some sort of program, community outreach, something like that. But no, everything is heavy-handed and with a gun and prison and jail and that sort of stuff.
We have a criminal justice system that is not incentivized by reform and has decided that a very specific portion of its population is irredeemable. Of course this kid's going to be a criminal. Right? He didn't get a good citizenship grade last card marking. So he's, of course, going to be a criminal. And it's probably not in writing, but I'm certain that a very high percentage of these students that are being watched and profiled are students of color.
Yeah, it talks about that. Yeah.
It's the same with epidemics that we've had in our history. You know, the war on drugs criminalized addicts. When those people were poor and black, they were criminals. Now you have an epidemic that has moved into a different sector of our community, and they are treated as people who are not well.
It's a health issue. It's not a criminal issue now.
That's not by accident. It's because the people that are being affected are redeemable. Therefore, they don't look like you and I. By nature, those acts were criminal because of the people that were involved, not because of the acts themselves.
Yeah.
It didn't take them this long to realize that people that were addicted to drugs was a health issue. It's just the people that were addicted weren't valuable enough for them to care. And there is a system in place that profits heavily from criminalizing those people. And again, creating that cycle, knowing absolutely well that what they're doing is wrong, but someone benefits immensely from it. So it's perpetuated on purpose. Once again, it's quite disgusting when you start paying attention to what the very obvious truths are to a system like that.
Do you know the... It might have been like the FBI director or the CIA, some sort of director. I think he worked under Nixon. Forgive me, I don't have the notes in front of me, but I do remember reading it on the show before even. Where, you know, this was when they, just before they started that Just Say No campaign or whatever. So what they did was they criminalized marijuana and... what they were trying to do was quell the activist movements from hippies and from the Black Panthers. There was like a revolutionary, you know, movement taking place in the country at that time. And the direct quote is, by criminalizing the marijuana, we could disrupt those communities. And that's exactly what they did. Marijuana, as we know now that it's legal and everywhere, was never really creating a harmful society. It didn't, you know, if anything, it made it better. People who chilled out and hung out and had fun. But because the government had perhaps fiscal incentive or otherwise needed to, you know, maintain their grip on society and, you know, thirsty for power, decided that marijuana was going to be criminalized, and then we end up in that situation. So, the other thing about this, though, in Florida was that, you know, again, it's called intelligence-based policing, which is, it misrepresents what it is. You know, it's not the opposite, because it's not stupid. It feels very deliberate, and it's just, it feels like busy work. If we look busy, then people will think that if we can tell them that we're doing, then we're, people if will feel
we're,
safer.
We're doing stuff.
Right.
A lot.
But there's no real help. I mean, I would imagine that at least some people, some of the nobler officers that say, you know what, I want to have a noble profession. Policing seems noble. You know, everyone drinks the Kool-Aid at a certain age. They go into it with those intentions. I really want to make a difference. I think I can keep people safe. I feel brave. I feel strong. And I want to protect people who can't protect themselves, right? It's very noble and sensible, you know, and if that's really, if you don't have any other options, you know, sure, why not? You know what I mean? Or maybe if you do, who knows? Everyone has their own story. And some people, I don't know what it's like to want to be a police officer, but...
I do.
Well, then
you know what I mean.
There you go.
My mother's brother and my father's brother, so my uncles on both sides of my family tree, were distinguished police officers
in Detroit.
Yes, my mother's brother had the unfortunate pleasure of policing the police. So as you can imagine, he was not a very popular person amongst officers. He was the chief inspector of internal affairs. And making police seems like a bad idea to me anyway. I know I just said that word a lot, but
it makes sense.
If I say it slower, you should be able to track it.
Swirl's tracking too.
In the back of my head, I'm like, no, it's good.
So I wanted to be a police officer when I grew up.
Yeah.
The most handsome and accomplished and distinguished men in my life, my uncles, were very successful police officers.
Sure.
One of them still. He retired and then did it again. And, you know, in different parts of the country. And, you know, they both upped the ranks as high as you can go. So, you know, speaking to someone and very close to someone who wanted to be a police officer and even tried to be.
Well, I think what happens is whenever I talk about policing, I don't have anything super awesome to contribute to it because I never wanted to be a police officer. It never appealed to me. I grew up in LA, so it's the LAPD. So that's like, I want to grow up and join a gang. You know what I mean? Like, nobody says that. I want to grow up and be a police officer. The police were the bad guys. You know, I saw police hurt people for no reason. Maybe there was a reason, but in my young mind, I didn't see anyone doing anything wrong.
It wasn't a justifiable reason, but there was absolutely a reason.
Okay.
That reason remains.
Yeah.
We see it on our smartphones and on our TVs daily.
And one of the stories I told before was that I saw the police take a man's head. They took him out of his car at a red light after pulling him over. They took a man's head and they smashed his head into the door of the car and it dented the door of the car in. This is in the 80s, so it was a metal car. And he was black, of course, heavier guy. He was wearing a tank top T-shirt. And that's what I remember. It was nighttime. And then once that happened, you know, we sped through the green light and left. And that was it. But I'm like, why would the police do that? He wasn't even, you know. Anyway, so I recognize that I don't always speak about police with a certain reverence that perhaps police are accustomed to hearing about themselves, or people are, you know, and it's not, I never want to be disrespectful because I recognize that beyond that uniform, they're humans. And I've committed my life to all men are my brothers, all women are my sisters. That means them too. That means I have to love them, right? But I appreciate you bringing that into my world, the story about your uncles, because, and then you're wanting to do it because that helps me to have a bit of reverence for that profession and folks that do want to do that.
Chief Inspector Harold Scott, Detective Gerald Ward.
There it is. So,
do you guys remember the movie Minority Report?
Yeah.
Which sounds eerie to say now.
Correct. It was science fiction once upon a time, except
it is a book written in 1956, made popular by Tom Cruise in 2002. But the premise was they fought crime before it happened because they had the information to stop it.
And the way that movie ends, I'm glad you brought that up, Swirl.
Bonkers.
The way that movie ends is they have to disband that program because, as it turns out, when it comes to the last minute, when it comes down to the come down, people still have a choice. Despite all of the information pointing to this, the crime will be committed. There was an error in the system. They had to release all the prisoners from their pre-crime unit, all this sort of stuff. And that's the way the movie ends.
Pre-crime.
So watch this. Now, I want to talk about something that happened in this video. And this was very important to me. Right? So again, this is the backdrop. These police are policing children under the assumption that they're going to be the ones who are going to be criminals. Right? What do the teachers have to say about this? You might hear me speak with a bit more reverence when I talk about teachers, because I have some teachers that made my life very special. Dr. Camilla Westenberg, who's been on the show a couple of times, is one such person. There's a teacher that is interviewed, and she says, I'm going to paraphrase. I'm going to just kind of tell her story. I don't know exactly what she said, but it was something like, you know, I love my students. Not all of my students are perfect. Not all of them come from perfect circumstances. Not all of them have everything that they need to thrive. But I love them. Somebody has to love these people, and I've chosen to love them, right? Now, I'm speaking for her. I'm not saying she said this, but I'm trying to convey what I took from it. She says that these students show up, and, you know, the school has betrayed them because the school says, oh, we're going to share your behavior. We're not going to take care of the behavior stuff here. We're going to share it with the police, the grown-up police. Right? We're going to share your behavior, your incident reports, your times in detention with the actual police.
And you were in detention because you didn't get to class before the bell rung or something.
For whatever reason. See, this is part of the reason why. So Janelle Wood has been on the show before from the Black Mothers Forum. And she's a big opponent of in-school policing. You know, when you went to high school, there was a police officer on the campus. She does not like that. She feels like that is a big part of the school-to-prison pipeline. And let her make a case for it, you will be on board. She is a powerful speaker, and she has her facts straight. But I digress. This other teacher, she's saying, you know, the school has condemned these children to bad, quote-unquote, criminal behavioral issues, you know, whatever. You know, a lot of times, a lot of places in society, maybe they had to move, and they're living with an aunt or, you know, whatever they, you know, whatever happened in their story, right? And no one tries to fix the problem. Everyone tries to diagnose the problem. And what happens is, if you get bounced around, if you go from this place to that place, even if you have a steady home life and you go from school to home and you hear, oh, this is a bad kid or this is a bad student or this is a behavioral issue or whatever, what motivation, what incentive, what prospects do you see for yourself? If that's all, these aren't adult minds where they say, you know what, you're wrong about me. I'm going to prove you wrong. That's not a common thing with children. Children, their whole reality, what they know is what they see. So if you tell a child over and over again, you know, this is who you are, they don't have the frame of reference to expect that they are anything different. And it becomes a self-fulfilling prophecy. And that's why it was so important to stop and say, what is the benefit of policing these children when you could take the same resources, the same manpower, the same fiscal resources, and put together. But what's to stop a police officer from working overtime, putting together a basketball league for all those 1,400 students, and playing basketball with them? What's to stop them from ingratiating themselves with these people? You know what I mean? Like, I know that's me pie in the sky talking, but that seems like, am I crazy?
You have to give a damn about those kids to start a basketball league and invest your time in them.
Fair enough.
You have to care about them.
Well, I know that this happens. This is an incident in Florida, but I do recognize that while it might not be as formal as it is in Pensco County, Florida, these are the sorts of things that happen all over the place. You know, there's plenty of stories of people getting harassed by police, you know, the police that lives on the other side of town but patrols in your neighborhood, and they come and, you know, hang out in front of your place all the time, stop at your business, come, you know, that it's just how it works. And so far be it for me to assume that this is the only place where this type of thing happens. And, you know, this show was partially born out of being critical of the way policing is done, not the humans, but the system. And so that is something else for us to ponder here. Stay out of Pensco County, Florida. Keep your kids away, too.
Avoid it at all cost.
Yeah, man. So Gotta move it on here a bit.
Brace yourselves.
Yeah, it's time for the Way Black History Fact.
Why y'all do me like
that? Swirl, man, what you got for us today? This is heavy.
Today's Way Black History Fact comes courtesy of Mr. Khalil Green. You can find on Instagram and TikTok at khalilgreen.green, which is khalil.green. And Khalil does a series, it's called the Hidden History Series, where he talks about the creepy, crazy, and covered up parts of American history, which, you know, I had Central Indiana public schooling, so a lot of what he talks about and other young folks on TikTok and on social media, the education continues. In this clip, he discusses an article from 1888, which describes a doctor who's wearing shoes made from the skin of Negroes. The doctor who was interviewed said that he had no sentiment on the matter because he wasn't from the South and he had fought to free black people in the Civil War. The article goes on to highlight that the doctor was not an exception, and more practical uses of Negro skin included cigar cases, slippers, and, of course, the best leather was always obtained from the cadaver's thighs. Khalil Green on IG and TikTok, Hidden History Series.
So, wow. Wow is all I got, Rams.
My first mental image is chaps. Like leather chaps. Like
wow is all I got.
Talk about Django earlier. Like that feels right. It feels on brand. Wild.
Yeah. And by the way, him not being from the South,
as if that absolved him from,
like, this idea that we can't have empathy unless we've literally experienced something ourselves, unless something directly affects us or our house. Like, come on, people.
You know, there was, I read something recently, and it was about like a riot on Wall Street in the 1800s. In that article, it mentioned that one in four white families owned at least one slave. So based on that, it seems like there's a lot more folks who own slaves than what some folks might have you to believe. But, you know, I wasn't there, so who knows? But, yeah, man, how would you like a Negro skin wallet or some Negro skin shoes?
And as insane as this sounds while you're listening to our voices say it today, once upon a time, no one would flinch from this. You know, just like we talk about a lot of the photos that we see that are gruesome, but you see families and their children in these photos, and it's every day for them. It's a normal thing. These people don't see themselves as immoral or unkind.
I think that kind of points to this undercurrent that exists in this country, this baseline of emotions with respect to black folks and the black plight. You know, there's this, you know, idea that, hey man, slavery was a long time ago, man. You weren't a slave, I wasn't a slave, you know, blah blah blah. But that attitude of like, hey man, that's just how it is, that's how, you know, like, it was whatever, that's kind of the attitude you see in those old photos of these people hanging out with at lynchings and burnings and, you know, all these sorts of things, where it's just like, hey man, that's just how it is, you know.
Smiling, happy,
having a great day.
I mean, that was an occasion. We're going to the lynching today. You guys ready?
They called it picnic.
Don't forget your lunch pail.
So, you know, there's, you know, that's obviously a very gruesome thing to know. Obviously, I've heard of that before. I remember reading about that in high school, that they would sell like alligator skin and Negro skin wares. They'd peddle them, you know, in the South. But, you know, for black folks that don't know that, you know, it's just another atrocity to throw on the back of, you know, all the other things that we carry. But for folks who, you know, maybe have listened to the show this far and are doing their best to be better, kinder people and more supportive people of their black brothers and sisters, that might be horrifying to hear. And, you know, I don't know how true it is, but, you know, we've talked before about, you know, generational trauma, traumas that like exist in our bones, things that make us sort of predisposed to triggers and things that really we're not able to be comfortable with, make peace with. And I know that if you've heard that for the first time, that once upon a time, the people that look like you, they took them and they took their skin and made clothes out of it. They made jackets and shoes. You know, what comes to mind is, okay, this person didn't get a proper burial. This person didn't get, probably didn't get a proper story. They were a thing.
Yeah, they were an object. They weren't seen as people.
And that's the thing. Like, there was this, I read something recently. It was, I read so much stuff. But they were talking about, you know, some of the slave owners treated their slaves really good, right? And you know, they were like families, you know, that's just kind of how it was. And they would love for you to think that that's the way it was. First off, that's never what it is. Everything that has consciousness wants its customary freedom. Human beings are paramount in that regard. But
imagine if the couple from the first story that were giving reparations, imagine if they pulled out their wallet and it's Negro's kid, pay reparations. Like, that's the kind of mindset that they would be oblivious to that level of gruesome history. But still, that's how it was.
Yeah.
Look at you.
Absolutely. So anyway, that's the way black history fact for the day. Unfortunately, it was a little heavy. But, you know, you need to know this. We need to know where we come from to know where we're going. We need to really come to terms with what's happened to really understand what's happening. We need to know where we've come from to know where we are and where we need to go.
Yes, sir.
And we will take time now and in the future to, you know, point out things like this. Hopefully some are a little bit more positive or less gruesome. But certainly I think it's worth knowing so that we understand who we are relative to each other and how to best support each other. And I think that's going to do it for us today on Civic Cypher. So once again, I'm your host, Ramses Ja.
They call me Q Ward.
Big shout out to our producer, DJ Swirl.
Swirl, you're the greatest.
Yes, indeed. And yeah, check us out online. Hit civiccypher.com to download this and all previous episodes. You can also check out our social media. It's all at Civic Cypher. And please donate to the show. This show exists because of your donations. We're able to keep doing it and keep growing. So if you can, please make a donation. We'd love to keep bringing you this content. We think it's important, and hopefully you do too. And until next week, y'all.
Peace.